Committee to order. We have a busy schedule today, as most people have been following what's happening in the legislature. This is our scheduled last meeting. We do have a carryover for tomorrow morning at 7:30 if we don't get finished. So our goal is to not be here at 7:30 in the morning and be finished before the end of the afternoon. With that in mind, we're going to do a couple of different things. My plan is to go through the work session materials that we have ready to go and move those so people who are here just for the work sessions will be able to go out and maybe check out another committee. And then we will go into our public hearings with possible work sessions on the bills that are scheduled that way. But at this point, what I want to do is open up a work session on two bills that are going to be moved to the Rules Committee. And at this point, I'm going to open up a work session on House Bills 2585 and House Bill 2892. And the chair would entertain a motion to refer those two bills to the Committee on Rules without recommendation.
So moved.
Senator Beyer moves that House Bill 2585 and House Bill 2892 be moved to the Committee on Rules without recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. So we've already on time here. We've got two bills knocked out. We're seeing if we can beat the judiciary's time frame today. It was a challenge that Senator Burdick probably didn't realize she actually had thrown out to us. So with that said, I believe Senator Westland had to go check in, so we'll come back to that bill. Let's go ahead and open up a work session, work session on House Bill 2871. And Ms. Moran, will you give us the overview on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2871A is the bill that limits the annual percentage rate on consumer finance loans to 36%. It has an A22 amendment, and that amendment is similar to the A21 amendment that was delivered to your office. And it also has the conflict amendments in it for House Bill 2205, 2204, and 2203. The A22 amendment has the discount rate. The cap is for the consumer finance loans is tied to the federal discount rate, 30% over the federal discount rate. And that will be set by DCDS annually. The first time it's set will be right after the bill goes into effect, and then it will be set again in January. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. So the chair will take a motion on the A22s.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe moves the A22s into House Bill 2871. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would like to make motion on a couple other amendments, too.
All right.
I would like to move that I think it's, we have, I'm looking for it, an A11 amendment. Does everyone have that one?
The A11 amendment was handed out with your packets. It should be in
yes. Your packets. Move the A11 amendment into House Bill 2871, Mr. Chair.
All right. Senator Beyer moves the A11 amendment into House Bill 2871. Mm-hmm. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment deals with the, and I think everyone has been received a letter from Mr. Hinkle dealing with the equal treatment of loan institutions. So this amendment would say that. Does everyone have an amendment? The A11 amendment?
Mm-hmm. I've got mine. I'm
looking for it.
I found mine. Like
it was down
the
a few days.
So it may have been not in the package you got today, but one that you got yesterday, maybe.
Oh, yeah. It was in the packet delivered yesterday.
And it says that notwithstanding any other provision of this section, a licensee may include terms, conditions, and charges in a consumer finance loan agreement that may be lawfully included in a comparable loan agreement entered into by a credit union regulator under ORS Chapter 723 or bank regulated under ORS Chapter 706. Basically, in layman's terms, the way I understand it is that the regulations of the bill would only apply then if they also apply to credit unions and banks that are federally chartered.
Right. That's my understanding, too. And we had distributed to us just before the meeting started an LC opinion dated today that I received about an hour ago at my request to address the issue that had been raised I'll just call it the Gardner letter, that Mr. Hinkle had provided to him regarding his analysis of the bill as it stood. And as stated in the LC opinion, our attorneys, is that they disagree with the opinion that has been brought forward by Mr. Hinkle as to the legislature not being able to actually move forward House Bill 2871 without having a constitutional issue. So the chair will not be supporting the Dash 11s based on the advice we have received from council.
Other
discussions? Senator Gordley.
Yeah, two things. I was prepared to support the Dash 11 prior to coming into the room and seeing this other opinion from legislative council. My question is the LC opinion also available to the public since we just got it within the hour? Is that over there on the table?
Senator Gordley, we passed it out
okay.
to the public.
Thank you.
Any other discussion?
I guess I want to say something. I think the work that Mr. Hinkle did is good work. I mean, I think there's an argument to be made there, like there oftentimes is when you're talking about constitutional issues related to complicated statute making like we are doing here. And I think his arguments are well founded. I've also read our legislative council's opinions, and I have to tell you, I think they are very well founded too. The crux of the matter comes to what kind of deference a court likely gives the legislative process in determining the types of classes that we're determining in this particular bill. And historically, the courts do give deference to the legislative determination such as that. And legislative counsel, I think, does a reasonably good job of saying that the classes we define between the types of people and institutions are rationally related to the purposes that we're trying to achieve in the bill. And for that reason, they would be constitutional. But I do think it's likely that someday this ends up in court and we are sitting here reading a court decision affirming whether we're right or not. But my analysis would be to go with the legislative council opinion.
All right. Any other discussion? If not, let's go ahead and call the roll. Brian, if you would, on the motion to adopt the A11s.
Senator Lockyer?
No.
Senator Gordley?
No.
Senator Monroe?
No.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Brzezinski?
The chair votes no. Not receiving the constitutional requirement that the motion fails.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Would like to try a different one then. I have moved the Dash A16 amendment.
Senator Beyer moves the Dash A16s to House Bill 2871. Senator, to your motion.
Mr. Chair, the A16 amendments, and hopefully everyone has those also in the packet.
Thank you.
Simply extend the deadline out to two years for loans made under Chapter 725, 340, 345, 347, 505, and 505. So those will become operative on July 1st, 2009. I guess to go back to what we talked, what the motion was on the bill last week, that I don't remember the bill number was now, but would have given that the payday lending institution, or excuse me, the title loan people a 1 year. This would give a 2 year to these types of loans to allow the people who hold leases to get out of the leases, shut down their businesses, their employees, some time to go out and move on to other arenas of work.
All right. Any other discussions?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, 2 years seems like a long time. How long would it take to, adjust your business or to close down your business if, in fact, that's what's necessary? Seems like it shouldn't take 2 years.
Yeah. Chair would also question that. It seems to me it's almost like the bill we voted on the floor that Senator Mexter carried, going out of business sale that just continues perpetually. the reality is I don't believe you're going to see a lot of mass exodus of the financial institutions out of this state based on the passage of House Bill 2871. In fact, the bill that Senator Beyer was talking about last week was 2205. And 2204, excuse me. And my understanding on that bill, and speaking with DCBS, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, all of those entities were, in fact, in the process of shifting their licenses or applying for licenses that wouldn't allow them to continue as conventional lenders. And based on the studies I have seen and the documentation that's been given to me, we have not seen in any other state that has this type of APR of 36% that people are going out of business because they can't make money. So the chair will not be supporting the A16 for that reason. Other comments? All right, Brian, if you'd be so kind to call the roll.
Senator Bakken?
No.
Senator Gordley?
No.
Senator Monroe?
No.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Prasadsky?
Chair votes no. Again, failing to get the necessary number, that motion fails.
And then one more, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Senator Monroe seemed to want a shorter time period, so now I will ask for entertainment of A20s, which grants a one-year extension. So I'd move the A20 amendments into House Bill 2871.
All right. Any further discussions on what first Senator Beyer moves House Bill or the amendments 20 A22, the bill 2871. Any further discussion?
Question for Senator Beyer.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Senator, is a part of your concern about those who are employed?
Yes. I mean, you have employees who work for these institutions, and I guess I would disagree with the chair and you know, that, yes, the conventional title loans are converting to these type of loans now, but now this bill will restrict those entities in the same way that the title loan people were converting to. So if the last bill was going to put them out of business, this one will also. So you've got employees there who, you know, and I'm sure all of your files look just like this. Many of that, those documentations are from employees who work at these lending institutions who say, what are we going to do for a job? This would give them a year to find something else, and also the lending institution themselves, if they can't make it, they can go to the Secretary of State's office, get their permit to go out of business, and hold their going out of business sale, and have a year to do it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Monroe?
You know, I might be willing to put this off until January, but not a whole year. So I still can't support this.
All right. Other discussions?
I'm sorry, I don't have one of those.
All right, let's go ahead and call the roll.
Senator Bakken?
No.
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
No.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Prasadsky?
Chair votes no, not receiving the necessary majority. That motion fails. Any other motions before we take up the bill as it is? Chair will now entertain a motion to move the bill with the dash A22s to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
So move.
Senator Avakian moves House Bill 2871 to the floor as amended by the dash A2s with a due pass recommendation.
A22
with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I won't support the motion. I think I was hoping Senator Monroe would have asked me the qualifying question on this one they did the last time. I could have given him an affirmative answer, and I would have supported the bill had the last amendment been adopted. But you didn't give me the opportunity this time, so I'll be a no.
All right. Any other discussions? Any other objections besides Senator Beyer? Motion carries, and the chair will carry this one. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2871. And Let's see what we got. Got lessons here. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 2891. And this is a work session, but we've been asked, Senator Westland asked to have a few moments to put something on the record.
Mr. Chair, which bill is it?
This is 2891. And before we hear from Senator Westland, Anna, why don't you give us the overview for 2891.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2891 requires the Employment Relations Board to certify a labor organization as the exclusive representative of employees if presented with signed authorization cards by a majority of employees. There's a dash 2 amendment which allows for an election if 30% of the employees of the bargaining unit request an election. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Senator Ben Westland, District 27. And just briefly, I recently had an experience in my own hometown that convinced me more than ever that House Bill 2891 is not only needed more than ever, but that it is indeed excellent public policy. As some of you may be aware, the Bend Area Transit bus drivers, dispatchers, customer service representatives endured very difficult and intimidating tactics recently when they voted to join a union. And on a more general note, employer abuse of workers during union elections is increasingly common, extremely stressful, and oftentimes illegal and hardly ever properly punished. Some people are concerned about workers being coerced into voting one way or another under the proposed legislation, and I appreciate that concern. But what those people should know was that in the last 60 years, unions have been cited 42 times, while employers have been cited more than 30,000 times in that same period. The more people who work union jobs, the better it is for Oregon. When workers join together to bargain, they bring home about 30% more income, are more likely to have health insurance, a key to lowering health care costs for us all, and are more likely to have a secure retirement. Unfortunately, working non-union jobs can lead to poor working conditions like those faced in Bend and by the Bend bus drivers. They face erratic scheduling that reduces their income and last-minute weekend plan changes that are very disruptive and not given in good faith. Several of these unpleasant working conditions magically improved after the workers started a campaign to join Oregon's largest union of bus drivers, in this case the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 757. Most of us like to hear both sides before casting our votes. Union opinions were not allowed at work, yet the company deluged them with anti-union memos. And though the company could communicate with workers as much as it liked, on the job site, those who wanted to discuss union possibilities could discuss the union only on their breaks. Yet only one employee at a time was allowed to take a break, and any notices left on the job site were promptly removed. Worst of all, the individual company in question here threatened them with the possibility of loss of their job or job should they go union. Indeed, one organizer was fired, and I'm very pleased to report that based on the union's activity, he was rehired with full benefits and full back pay. Some pro-union workers were shunned in the office. Some pro-union drivers saw their hours cut, and it was mentioned that they could all be fired and replaced. Several people left the company because of the stress put upon them by the employer. House Bill 2891, the majority sign-up, would allow workers to have their unions recognized after a majority of them signed cards saying they were choosing the union. This process is already legal and in use with success here in Oregon. Instead, VAT workers had to go through the ballot process where a majority voted to go union only to have the outcome appealed by the company. I very much appreciate your bringing this important bill forward, and I appreciate you allowing me to testify on this legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Any questions for the Senator? Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And so I understand on the some of the concerns that have been raised when we had the public hearing, we wanted to ensure that there's a means for those who may have given their signature card on a check on this process of getting certification would have a means to challenge it. I believe the Dash 2s will accomplish that. And Ms. Ron, when you gave your overview, I don't know if you actually talked about the Dash 2s.
Yes, I mentioned that.
Okay. And so does anyone have any questions regarding the Dash 2s? If not, the chair will entertain a motion to adopt the Dash 2s into House Bill 2891.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Avakian moves the Dash 2s into House Bill 2891. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. And the chair will now entertain a motion to move the bill to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2891 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Avakian moves House Bill 2891 as amended by the Dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you. I did not object to the amendment. It makes a bad bill, and not quite such a bad bill, but it's still a bad bill, in my opinion. I can't understand this process where we all get elected by a secret ballot. That seems to be the fundamental thing that our country was built on, is the idea of a secret ballot, and this legislature wants to take that away from certain people. It doesn't make any sense to me. I'll be a no.
All right. And any other discussions? And any other objection to the motion besides Senator Beyer? If not, so ordered, it passes. And yeah, and the chair will carry this unless someone else wants to have the honor. The chair will be honored by carrying this bill, House Bill 2891. And we close.
What did we just do?
We're just closing on the passage of House Bill 2891 with the Dash 2 amendments.
Okay.
This is the card check with the.
Can I be recorded
elections as
voting aye?
And since I have not thrown the gavel down yet, please show Senator Monroe voting aye on the motion. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2891. And the chair will carry that one. And we're going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2397. And Ms. Brown, why don't you give us that information? I know Representative Comp is here, and I believe Representative Boquist needs to be notified for he can appear. And then we also have Al Shannon that will take at the same time. Those are the three that we have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2397A allows the Public Employees Retirement Board to accept rollover contributions from a retired member solely for the purpose of paying amounts claimed by the board as overpayments or other improperly made payments. Allows the beneficiary to be paid for death benefits from a public employee retirement system member by an eligible rollover distribution to either an individual retirement plan or individual retirement annuity. There's an A6 amendment, and that amendment allows buyback of PERS benefits. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Vice Chair.
Representative Comp.
Thank you, Senator Beyer. Senator Beyer, committee, my name is Betty Comp, and I represent House District 22, and that's Woodburn, Jervis, the beautiful countryside of Brooks in North Salem. I'm happy to be here to introduce House Bill 2397, and this is a very bipartisan bill because I think Mr. Shannon is a colleague of mine. We were opponents in a race, and he came with a great idea and said, how about this bill, Betty? And I said, it sounds good to me. And so with that, it is my honor to work with him, and he will give you whatever real depth and details because he's the expert on this issue. But this is about the Public Employees Retirement Board to accept rollover contributions from any retired member solely for purpose of paying amounts claimed by the board as overpayments of other improperly made or other improperly made payments. If the recipient owes money to PERS, he or she can repay the overpayment in one lump sum or via an actuarial reduction to the revised monthly benefit. If the recipient chooses to pay the entire amount owed in a lump sum payment, the recipient's monthly payments will be revised monthly benefit as the benefit adjustment date. That's not technical stuff. Alternately, the recipient can choose to repay the overpayment via an actuarial reduction to the revised monthly benefit based on the length of time the benefit is expected to be paid. No interest or fees will be charged to the member under either repayment process. What this is about is there was a miscalculation of how much the PERS amounts were going to be, and it allows, as Mr. Shannon will share with you, different methods of taking other funds to repay the PERS board. And it's a win-win for everybody, and with that, I would appreciate your consideration. And I'll stay to see if you have any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Al Shannon. I reside at 7955 Portland Road, northeast in Salem, actually in Brooks, Oregon. Thank you. I think Representative Comp has done a good job in explaining the technicalities of the bill, but it does stem around a litigation that the City of Eugene and other municipalities entered in with the PERS board. And Judge Lipscomb did rule that they over-awarded interest in the spring of 2000 on the 99 earnings, and which created an obligation for those of us retired in a window period. And so we owe that money back. And I'm not contesting that at all. I think that's like receiving too much change in when you go to the grocery. So we owe that money back, and I'm just trying to think of a way, or I tried to think of a way that this could be as painless as possible. It's a win-win, as Representative Comp mentioned, because PERS gets their money in a ka-chunk way, and also that those of us are free of the obligation. So with that, you have my written testimony. If I have any questions, or if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, thank you. Before we take any questions, Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Boquist, House District 23, and I appreciate my esteemed colleague to my right and esteemed constituent farther to my right. The Dash 6 amendment slightly expands the concept of the bill. This actual amendment came up in the Dash 1 through 5s in our side of the chamber, and for a couple of technical reasons didn't get meshed into the bill. What the Dash 6 does is it expands the basic concept. The Dash 6 builds on that concept to provide further options requested by PERS members, including constituents of my own. The Dash 6 amendment would allow for a tax-free rollover from the state deferred compensation plan into the PERS in order to make the service time purchase. In a nutshell, what we're talking about is individuals who have been in the state service for more than 35 years, who are over the age of 60, and are buying back out of their compensation, using that compensation to buy back into PERS. The other option would be for one of these individuals to simply retire and come back to work tomorrow, which the state loses in that particular side. In the Dash 6 amendment, what it would do is allow a 60-day window for those individuals to come back and buy back. Again, it is individuals that are over the age of 60 and have been 35 years in service, and there are only 126 individuals in the state that fit into this classification right now that have been identified by PERS, and according to PERS themselves, there is no impact on employer contributions, and there's no administrative fiscal impact either. It's simply, again, like Al is trying to do here, provide a service and allow an option.
All right, thank you. Any questions for anyone on the panel? Thank you very much. I'm going to check to see if there's anyone else who wants to testify on House Bill 2397. And Representative McPherson, were you here on 2397?
I was.
We'll go ahead and let you get started.
I wasn't paying attention to until just a few minutes ago, and I realized I may not have failed to communicate effectively. Are we ready to proceed then with the Vice Chair?
Go ahead. Yes.
Okay, thank you, Vice Chair. There was a technical problem in the House amendments that were adopted on the House side of the bill just a technical point, that was 180 degrees wrong from what it should have been. It provided for rollovers to non-spouse beneficiaries. That is, expands a rollover right to non-spouse beneficiaries. And it, under the text of the A. N. Gross bill, it limits the eligible rollover distribution to cases where there's a life annuity or lifetime payout being made, which is just the opposite of the, what federal law permits. Federal law permits, does not allow rollover of lifetime payments. It has to be a non-lifetime payment. And it was an error that was discovered just after the amendments were adopted on the House side. And I had technical corrective amendments prepared by Ledge Council, but in the haste of the business here, as we know, as we're winding things down in the session, I don't know that I ever got those amendments into the hands of somebody who could then get them queued up to be adopted by the committee. So what I would urge is that you, if I could spend a few minutes locating my copy of those amendments, and then if you could continue the work session until I get my hands on them, then I would bring them back and present them to the committee if that meets with you.
Like in the next hour, you mean?
Yes. It's just a question of something that's already been prepared. It's just a question of laying my hands on something that exists that I realized that was up for work session here today and that I had not gotten into the hands of the right person.
Thank you for bringing that forward and point it out to us. I guess the chair isn't here, but I guess if you can't find them by between now and 5 o'clock,
yeah,
we could always send a bill to the Rules Committee.
That's
actually, why don't we just call down the Legislative Council and have them bring a copy?
They should be able to bring a copy.
I'm going to head down there directly myself. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Lay my hands
that
on
will
the
probably
top.
Be more
okay,
effective.
Okay, so, yeah, just get them back to us as soon as you can, and we'll look forward to them prior to 5 o'clock.
Very good.
Thank you, Representative. Is there anyone else who wanted to testify on House Bill 2397? Steve, did you want to have a chance to look at the six amendments? And would you come make a comment on them?
Vice Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director PERS. We did see the Dash 6 this morning, Senator Beyer, and did assist Representative Boquist in understanding the technical nature of what it accomplished. So it was kind of covered in his testimony.
And you would concur there is no cost to the system with these?
It is no cost, but it's because there are so few. Because it's limited to this narrow group of people being 16 and above, having to have 35 years of service, we've identified at a maximum, you're looking at 126 members that we can find in the system. We're assuming even if all 126 were to take advantage of this, it's just not enough that would move a number in our system. We could cover with existing staff, and it would not move a rate. We did check with our actuary.
But this... That's today. What about next year?
Absolutely, Senator. I mean, we would have to go back and look at this. If you were to expand and increase eligibility, we'd have to look at it again at that point to make a determination. But with this Dash 6 specifically, there is not a fiscal impact.
So, and it's because it's limited to 60 days?
It's got a 60-day window, but also more specifically, it's a Section 5 that has the limitations of being age 60 and above. And with the purchases totaling 35 years or more of service, we just don't have that many people in the system that meet those two criteria.
But, and those people, I mean, next year, would someone who is 59 now and has 34 years of service, when they turn 60 and have 35 years of service, would they be eligible?
Senator, only if they were to, that were to occur in that 60-day window. This bill, as you see, has a 60-day window of opportunity, and then it shuts. So the person has to make this election within 60 days of the effective date of the bill.
But the effect, not an effective day of them becoming, not them reaching these two criteria dates.
Senator, if they were to reach those two criteria within those 60 days, so if the bill were to become effective and the 60-day window opens, and they then became age 60, and it would also give them 35 years. Yes, they would join that group, but just our assumption is there would be very few people that, because of the limitation, that would impact.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Vaughan,
Are you familiar with the amendment that Representative McPherson dashed off to find?
Senator Prusansky and members of the committee, I'm aware of the issue. That was our tax specialist that contacted him. I'm not a tax specialist, so I'm aware there is an issue. They've been working with Representative to get the correction technical language there.
All right. Any other questions? Is there anyone else who wants to give testimony on 2397? If not, I'm going to go ahead and go into recess. Not recess. I'm going to go ahead and temporarily close the public hearing. Yeah, the public hearing on House Bill 2397, reserving the right to bring it back open for a public hearing or work session. Debating on whether Representative McPherson finds the missing amendments. It is the chair's intention to move the bill today since it is our last day. I just want to see if we can get those other amendments that apparently needs to be vetted at least. So with that, we're going to move into our next bill, which is going to be a public hearing on House Bill 2619. And Anna, why don't you give us an overview on that one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2619 allows police officer members of the public employee retirement system to receive credit for prior service as a public safety officer with another state or political subdivision of another state. There's a dash 4 amendment, which replaces your dash 1 amendment that was delivered in your packets, and that exempts service as a member of the Legislative Assembly or service by the Oregon State Police for the legislative session from limitations of the retirement. Dash 3 amendment allows members who have reestablished active membership in PERS to be able to reactivate their inactive accounts. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, I have, looks like four people want to give testimony. Is Representative Witt here? Okay, well, he's scheduled here. I don't know if he was. I know Judy's here from the office. So, Brian, why don't you come on up, Judy, and I'll go ahead and ask Bethann Darby as well to please come up.
For the record, Brian DeLeichmann, representing the Oregon Council of Police Associations. I was here on the base bill. I'm now becoming aware of the other amendments. Early in the session, Representative Holvey asked me about the base bill, the ability for officers who have served in other states to actually buy back a full buyback, so it's no cost to the system, any service or up to a certain number of years of service in another state as an option for service time. Whether that was, in fact, a value to officers and a value to recruiting after looking at it, especially in a time when we're going to be looking at recruiting a substantial number, hopefully a substantial number of additional state troopers, and some of the applicants are coming from Michigan, California, Washington, and other states that I've seen, I think it does have value. There's no cost to the system. They pay the entire cost, and with that, I'll close.
Okay. I'm going to speak to the dash 4s, which are basically the same as the dash 1s, but we discovered a slight drafting error and actually got it corrected before we got your meeting began today. For the record, my name is Judy Signet, and I work for State Representative Brad Witt. And the genesis of the amendment, the dash 4 amendment, actually was last interim when several of us were talking about what goes on, and we happened to come upon the fact that if you're below the age of full Social Security retirement, you're limited to a number of hours that you can work if you're a member of the PERS system and you're working for a PERS-covered employer. Well, knowing legislative sessions, you never know how long they're going to be, and those folks covered under PERS have to either lower their hours that they work or become volunteers because they run out of hours that they can work under PERS. And we thought that since the legislature had exempted themselves, maybe it would be good for their staff to be able to work a full session and not be covered under the 1,039 rule. And that's what this bill does, and it exempts legislative staff, session and regular session, but not during the interim, you're still governed by 1039. And it covers the state police, retired state police officers that are working here during session for the state police. And they have a much, let's see, they run out hours long before regular staff does because they work so many extra hours because of night hearings and have to be here early in the morning. And they have a major scheduling problem in addition to the fact because there aren't as many that want to work, retirees that want to work. And those who do want to work have a scheduling problem because they run out of the 1,039 hours that they can.
Chair Pozonski, members of the committee, my name is Beth Ann Darby, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Education Association, and we are asking for you to adopt the Dash 3 amendments. We have, this is, our example is we have a member who is a school psychologist from Lane County. She was a Tier 1 member employee. She worked for 4 years. She never vested in PERS. She left her money in her PERS account. It continued to accrue interest for 5 years, at which time it stops accruing interest and just sits there. 6 years later, she came back and became a PERS-covered employee again. And now that she is an active member of the system, she can't get to that Tier 1 money. She doesn't have any ability to roll it into an IRA. It doesn't accrue interest. It just sits there. And what this language in the bill does is it allows our member, but other similarly situated PERS employees, to if they become active members again after their account changes into that status of no longer accruing earnings, to accept net earnings and losses. It just simply allows them to do something with their money once they discover that it's there. Thank you.
All right. Brian DeLeichman again. I addressed the base bill in relationship to the retired state troopers. I do understand the problems they are having. Every time I go up and down the hall, the retired officers do explain to me very vividly that as of this Thursday or this Friday, they have maxed out their hours and they will be gone and somebody else will be coming in, but there's not someone else to be coming in. And they have no control over the length of the legislative session or the number of hours that they would, in fact, be working during a day because of the night schedule. So they would like to have the Dash 4, the portion on page 3 of the Dash 4.
All right. First, I got Representative Witt here, but before we ask y'all to move, I'm going to ask if there's any questions for any of the three that are up here. If not, Brian, why don't you just stay close by? Some of the members may not have all the amendments in front of them. I want to make sure everyone's still around. Representative Witt, why don't you come on up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Brad Witt, state representative from House District 31 from the northwest corner of our state, and I'm here today in support of House Bill 2619, and would just like to lend my support to Representative Holvey's portion of the bill, and also to speak in behalf of the Dash 3 amendment. Certainly, some of the most experienced people that we could hire as legislative staff would be retirees out of the PERS system. It's not entirely easy to find folks who are willing to come on a staff or take a job for a limited duration, half a year, maybe a little more, something like that. Oftentimes, a retiree is available to work those during that period, would like to be able to work during that period. And to the extent that, as I say, we gain the benefit of experienced personnel who have retired, and the legislature and presumably the state of Oregon is well served by their service, then it's my feeling that we ought not to adversely impact their PERS. So therein lies the purpose for the amendment. And as I said, I would also like to lend my support to the state police, who would also benefit under this bill. I know I had a visitor last week from Washington, D.C., who was shocked at her ability to walk into a building and not have to go through either a personal search or a search of her effects, and asked me how it is possible to walk into a public building. I said, well, things are different in Oregon than Washington, D.C., but that we do enjoy the protection of a significant number of retired state police here. And quite frankly, I personally feel very well served by their presence, and I would certainly want them to be able to continue that and to enjoy their retirement as well. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to try and answer any questions that you or your committee members might have.
Questions for the representative?
I don't think so. You're off the hook. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you very much.
All right. And is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on the bill that's before us, which is 2619? Not seeing anyone rushing up. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing on 2619. And we'll go ahead and open up a work session on 2619. And Ms. Braun, I understand we have two amendments that we need to consider, the dash 3 and the dash 4.
Yes, that's right, Mr. Chair.
And the chair will take a motion on either of those two amendments at this time.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash 3 amendments.
Senator Bakken moves the dash 3s into House Bill 2619. Any discussion? Any objection?
Mr. Chair, I would be opposed to that motion.
All right. So ordered. On the vote on the dash 3s that are in the bill.
Mr. Chair, I will also move the dash 4 amendments.
Senator Bakken moves the dash 4s into House Bill 2619. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And the chair will now entertain a motion on the bill as amended.
And Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2619 as amended by the dash 3s and dash 4s to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bakken moves House Bill 2619 as amended by the dash 3s and the dash 4s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair, let me go first. Senator Beyer, every time we bring up these PERS bills, makes the comment that we seem to be chipping away with all these amendments, and he's right. I don't know if it's a bad thing or a good thing. I think it's a good thing because the cases that come to us seem compelling to me, like they need these fixes. But at the same time, it gives me this feeling that, since Representative McPherson is in the room now, that maybe we continue to need a comprehensive look at our PERS system and how it relates to the various situations that present itself to us.
All right, thank you, Senator Beyer.
Well, I think it's very similar, except for I'm going to come to a different conclusion. You know, obviously, I mean, I wish the dash fours. You know, I understand the issue here, especially with the troopers who volunteered and to work in the Capitol. And the staff. I mean, I have had staff also that's had to leave before the end of the session. I guess one solution in this arena would be to make sure we have short sessions.
We're working there. Not quite short enough.
But, I don't know how many exemptions this session alone now to the 1,039 rule or whatever law we have on when you can come back and work. But this has got to be at least the third or fourth. And then you've got these other two issues that, you know, these issues were dealt with in 2003. The intent was to close the system and not keep bringing people in. And not, you know, otherwise, we're going to get right back to where we were. I'm going to say it every time we have one of these bills. I'm going to be opposed to the bill. I mean, you're right. Every case that comes forward is compelling. And you can make a case for the 40-some thousand employees we have on PERS or whatever it is. It's probably more than that. It's probably double that. I don't even know. But every one of them has a story to tell. And unless you shut the door, that system becomes unworkable.
All right. Any other comments? Any other objections to the motion before us except for Senator Beyer? Not so ordered. And Senator Bakken, would you be so kind to carry this one?
Yep.
close the work session on House Bill 2619. And I'm going to go reopen the public hearing on 2397. Representative McPherson. And I think we got the other several amendments that are going to be delivered now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, State Representative Greg McPherson, House District 38. You should have in your hands, or will momentarily have, the A7 amendments to House Bill 2397. This is a fix to a set of amendments that were added to the bill on the House side, which were designed to create an opportunity for a non-spouse death beneficiary to roll over a distribution received from the PACE system. Rollover means that you can put the money into another tax-sheltered account without having to pay taxes on it. Most typically, a rollover is made to an individual retirement account, an IRA. When that amendment was prepared on the eve of the end of consideration of House bills and House committees, there was just a drafting error in the amendment that was made. And as I indicated earlier when I was alerting you to this issue, what the text of the amendment said is that the non-spouse beneficiary rollover right is limited to a distribution. If you look on page 2 of the A. Engrossed bill, on lines 13 through 19, it says an eligible rollover distribution means a distribution of any death benefit payable to the designated beneficiary of a deceased member of this chapter by a series of substantially equal periodic payments made at least annually for the life or life expectancy of the distributee or for the joint lives or life expectancies of the distributee and a designated beneficiary. And then it goes on to say that satisfies the requirements of 26 U.S.C. 402c4. Well, the technical problem is that under that section of the U.S. Code, it is distributions that are substantially equal over life or life expectancy that cannot be rolled over. So there's an internal inconsistency even in the language that was put into the amendment, so that it would, if somebody interpreting it would have to have reconciled this provision that says you can only roll over lifetime payments with a provision in the U.S. Code which says you can't roll over lifetime payments. Well, in fact, the law under federal tax law is that it has to be something other than a lifetime payment in order to be able to roll it over. And the policy choice made under federal law is that if you're receiving a life annuity, that's something to live on. So you receive it typically each month, and you can then spend it. You don't need to roll it over to shelter the income. Whereas a distribution of something other than a monthly lifetime income is appropriate for you to be able to put it into an IRA, so you don't pay tax on it now. You keep it there, being invested until you need it, and then you take it out and pay tax on it. So what the -A7 amendments do is correct that technical error that was made on the House side, that language appears several places in the bill, and it's replaced actually each location within the bill, starting with on line 6 of the A7s, and rather than repeat the rule about what is a distribution that is eligible for a rollover, what this amendment does is simply shorten it so that it is a reference only to an eligible rollover distribution as defined in 26 U.S.C. 402c4. So it relies only on the cross-reference rather than trying to describe what that section contains. So it avoids that inconsistency that arose on the House side. And the only other change made by the amendment is deleting some unnecessary language that it was at the top of page 2, lines 3 and 4 of the page 2 of the A. Engrossed version, which refers to a requirement that the receiving account be treated as an inherited IRA or individual retirement annuity for federal tax purposes, and that was deemed to be unnecessary because it's just reciting something that's in the federal tax code and is not something that is necessary to be in our statute, and the PERS agency had recommended a change in that text. So with these A7 amendments, we will have avoided the inconsistency that was created when the House amendments were put into the bill.
All right. Questions regarding the A7s or any other comments made by the representative? Representative, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, so, Ms. Brown, it looks like on this bill that we have before us, 2397, there are two sets of amendments that we need to address, one being the A6 as well as the A7s.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And I'm wondering if Senator Monroe, if you'd be so kind to make a motion on the dash A6.
So moved.
I don't believe you're in work session, are you?
Oh, I apologize. Thank you. That's right. We.
No.
Thank you, Senator Beyer. We're going to close the work session on the bill that's before us, which is 2397, and we're going to go ahead and open a work session on 2397. And as I suggested, we have two amendments, the dash 6 and the dash 7s, that we need to consider moving.
Both of them?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I would move the dash 6 amendments to 2397.
Senator Monroe moves the dash 6 amendments into House Bill 2397. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I will oppose that motion.
All right.
Yeah, that was the A6s, right?
A6.
That's a good
yeah.
That's a good amendment.
Any other comments? Any other objections? So ordered.
A7?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A7 amendments to 2397.
Senator Monroe now moves House the A7s into House Bill 2397. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Gordley.
I would just like to establish on the record that Representative Comp, who is seated in the back of the room, is okay with... Thank you.
All right. And those who are watching on TV that didn't get to see the big thumb go up... Not that big, but meaning approval that it was up, not down. So any other comments or questions?
Boquist, too, had a thumb up.
Okay.
Put them both on the record.
It's a twofer.
It's a twofer.
All right.
Sorry, Representative.
All right. So any objections to the A7s being adopted? So ordered. And the chair now will take a motion on the bill as amended.
Move 2397 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
As amended?
As amended.
Senator Monroe moves House Bill 2397 as amended by the dash A6s and the dash A7s to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonner. I'm going to put on the record, I do not, I'm not going to oppose this bill, and the reason is because after the 03 changes, the courts decided this is now a technical fix to deal with the issue to allow employees flexibility. He says they owe money back, and that for that reason, that's why I didn't support the A6s. That is not part of that technical fix. That's an expansion. But the rest of the bill is a technical fix that we need to do to give the employees flexibility because the court said that the HERS board did something wrong. Mm-hmm. And we need to give employees an opportunity to pay that money back and do it in a way that makes sense.
Okay, great. Any other comments? Any objections to the motion? So ordered. And the carrier for House Bill 2397. Senator Gordley will be our carrier. Thank you. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2397. And what else we got? All right, we'll go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2783. And Ms. Brown, why don't you give us the overview on that one, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2783A requires a workers' compensation insurer to provide notice of termination of a 45-day coverage 45 days prior to the effective date of termination establishes. If termination is due to a non-payment, the termination is effective no sooner than 10 days after the date the notice is mailed to the employer. There is an A3 amendment, and the A3 amendment resolves conflicts with Senate Bill 559. The Commerce Committee will recall we passed that bill dealing with guarantee contracts earlier this session, and this amendment basically changes the terminology from guarantee contracts to workers' compensation policies, I believe. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And that was the A3?
That's A3. That was handed out with your packets yesterday.
All right. Looks like Sean Miller's here, and then John Schultz, and Jerry Manahan. Sorry, trying my best there. Lunch. And is John here too? Okay, I've got whoever wants to start.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sean Miller, I represent Liberty Northwest in support of House Bill 2783 as well as the A3 amendments, which are the conflict amendments as Anna described in Senate Bill 559, which is now, I believe, heading to the governor. House Bill 2783 is something in the interim that we worked on that extends the termination notice of 30 days and extends it to 45 days with a 10-day non-payment provision. The bill, Representative Shields, we worked with the representative in the interim, as well as the discussions on Senate Bill 559. But it goes back to last session when I believe actually this committee adopted a bill that does the same exact thing in the insurance code on the liability side, which is 45 days with a 10-day non-payment. This just keeps it on the workers' comp consistent. It also is consistent with most of this, the states in the United States, and we would urge the committee to pass House Bill 2783 with the A3 amendments.
All right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jerry Manahan. I'm the Deputy Administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. I'll be very brief. Basically, going along with what Sean has said, one of the things that I'd like to add is that this has been reviewed by the Management Labor Advisory Committee, and they do support the bill. And there are about 30 other states that have a 10-pay option in there. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
All right, questions for either gentleman? Not seeing any. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on 2783? If not, we'll close the public hearing on 2783. We'll open a work session on 2783, needing a motion on the dash A3s.
Chair, move the dash A3 amendments into House Bill 2783.
Senator Beyer moves the dash A3s into House Bill 2783. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Chair, House Bill 2783 is amended to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer moves House Bill 2783 as amended by the A3s to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer, will you carry this one?
Sure.
Thank you. And we'll close the work session on 2783. And let's see here. All right, 3362. We're going to open public hearing on House Bill 3362.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3362 requires a home care commission to elect workers' compensation coverage for home care workers who are paid by the state on behalf of their client, allows for termination of temporary total disability benefits of home care workers who refuse modified employment in certain circumstances. There is an amendment that arrived today. It's a dash one amendment. I believe it was on your desk. And this conforms this bill to Senate Bill 158, which the Senate Commerce Committee passed earlier this session, except with the difference being this requires the workers' compensation coverage, and Senate Bill 158 just allowed it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. We have Art Towers and Mary Wood, and then also it looks like Julia Huddleston.
Senator Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Arthur Towers, political director for Service Employees Union Local 503. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today. Let me give you copies of my written testimony. House Bill 3362 provides workers' compensation coverage to in-home care providers for the elderly and disabled. House Bill 3362 covers workers employed through the Client Employee Provider Program, Oregon's largest in-home care program. This legislation was approved by MWAC and passed the House 59-0. And House Bill 3362 codifies existing practice. Currently, home care providers must bargain for workers' compensation coverage. They've successfully done that, but they have, do have to go through a bargaining process to secure that, as opposed to being covered as most other workers are under the law. I won't read you my entire testimony, but I will point out that SCIE Local 503, the Home Care Commission, and SAFE Corporation have been partnering in efforts to improve health and safety for home care workers and the people they care for. Training programs for home care workers have been developed in the last 18 months around health and safety issues. We've also begun a new training initiative for home care consumers, which will include a focus on maintaining a safe work environment. The cost has come in significantly below expectations on workers' comp, and so we do urge your support for this legislation. Be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Wood?
Chair Prozanski, members of the committee, thank you for the chance to testify today. My name is Mary Wood, and I'm a home care worker. I live in Lincoln City. When you apply for employment, do you ask your employer if you're going to be covered by workers' compensation? No, you expect to be covered. Home care workers want the same kind of protections. Home care workers are the only workforce in the state of Oregon that has to bargain for workers' comp. Our workers' comp costs since 2004 have consistently been 50% lower than projected. The cost of our workers' comp will be no different when this bill passes. It is very demeaning for home care workers to have to bargain for workers' comp every 2 years. We would like the same respect of other employees in the state of Oregon. I urge you to pass House Bill 3362.
All right, thank you.
Chair Prozanski, members of the committee, my name is Julia Huddleston from Seniors and People with Disabilities Division of the Department of Human Services. I'll be very brief. The Seniors and People with Disabilities Division pays the bills on behalf of all the collectively bargained benefits. We support this bill.
Thank you. Questions for anyone on the panel? Thank you very much. And was there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on House Bill 3362? Not seeing any, we'll close the public hearing on 3362. We'll open a work session on House Bill 3362.
I'll move the dash ones, Mr. Chair.
All right. And Senator Vakin moves the dash ones into House Bill 3362. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
And I'll move House Bill 3362 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Vakin moves House Bill 3362 as amended by the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Senator Cordon, reason no. I voted against 158 and this one.
Any other objection besides Senator Beyer? So ordered. And Senator Gordley, would you like to carry this one?
Yes.
All right. Senator Gordley will be our carrier on 3362. Thank you. And I've got another bill that I know I'm going to move to rules. I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2513 and ask for a motion to move that bill without recommendation to the rules committee. I'm going to say with the recommendation of a due pass recommendation to rules. With?
With the due pass, but without any amendments?
Need amendments?
It does not need any amendments.
Which one do you want?
2513. You can do the amendments that you were rolling for another time.
Okay.
And if you put a due pass recommendation on it, you're kind of saying you don't want amendment.
I'm looking at what we...
Yeah.
Do we have any amendment? Oh, I see. Never mind. I got it.
We haven't.
All right. Without recommendation, I understand where we're at. Why this is preset, thinking that we're moving it without doing any work here. So
moved with no recommendation.
All right. Senator Barr moves House Bill 2513 without recommendation to the Rules Committee to be worked in that committee. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. All right. And so do you want to go to the last hearing? And which one did you want to start with?
2460.
Open a work session on House Bill 2460. Ms. Braun?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2460, we heard on May 23rd, and this allows a worker to take a worker who has been disabled to take workers' compensation instead of family leave. And we had a dash one amendment last time, and it just had a small technical problem, and it's been fixed. So the dash two amendment is just before you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash two amendments.
Senator Avakian moves the dash twos into House Bill 2460. Is there any discussion on the dash twos? Any objection? So ordered.
And move the move House Bill 2460 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Avakian moves House Bill 2460 as amended by the dash two amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Recorded as a no, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any other objections? So ordered with Senator Beyer voting no. And do I have a carrier for this one?
Sure.
All right. Listen here. I think Senator Avakian may have been first on that one there.
Yeah.
It was a real race between Senator Gordley and myself.
I know. I was getting whiplash here watching her hands moving. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2460. Open a work session on House Bill 2635.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2635 was before us on May 23rd. It adds grandparent or grandchild to the definition of family member for purposes of family leave. And there's a dash three amendment, similar to what we saw last time, but it does do a fix on the last section three, whether occurring before, on, or after the effective date of the 2007 Act. And that's to take care of the existing court cases that we heard about on May 23rd. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Chair will take a motion on the dash three amendments.
So moved.
Senator Avakian moves the dash three amendments for House Bill 2635. Discussion? Objection? So ordered.
And move House Bill 2635 to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Avakian moves House Bill 2635 as amended by the dash threes to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, this is a particularly important bill in this day and age that we live in, where we often have non-traditional families. We often have grandparents raising grandchildren. My parents raised my sister's two children when my sister had mental health issues. Happens a lot in our society today, and this bill recognizes that. It's a very important bill.
Right, thank you. Any other discussion?
You know.
Any objection besides Senator Beyer? So ordered. Senator Monroe, will you carry House Bill?
I would be more than happy to.
Senator Monroe will be our carrier on House Bill 2635. We'll close the work session on 2635. And we will open a work session on House Bill 2205.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2205A makes the distinctions between the consumer finance loans and the short-term payday or title loans. It requires a license. It requires a consumer finance loan to be loans that are 90% underwritten or amortized. It authorizes DCBS to regulate and declares emergency effective July 1st, 2007. It has an A3 amendment, which makes several changes I could go into with the committee if you so choose.
So choose.
All right. The A3 amendment deletes definitions for consumer finance loan and consumer finance loans license. removing the requirement for a loan term of not less than 6 months to Section 3. It adds a definition for consumer finance licensee and revised short-term license definition. It changes terminology from granting loans to making loans. It changes references from lender to licensee. It changes the wording from regarding GCBS authorization to adopt rules. It removes requirement that current licensees apply for a proper license within 30 days based on the previous year's lending activity. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. Chair will take a motion for the Dash 3 amendments.
So moved.
Senator Bakken moves the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2205. Discussion? Objection? So ordered.
And move House Bill 2205A as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Bakken moves House Bill 2205A as amended by the Dash 3 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
You record me as an O.
All right, any other objections? So ordered, and the chair will carry this one. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2205, and we will open up.
That's the last one.
We've got two more.
Okay. We got this.
And I see Representative McPherson here. Ah, there he is. We'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 3183. Representative, why don't you come on up? And then I've got Mark, who looks like you're here. Please come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3183 clarifies that an educational institution can provide non-elective employer contributions to a tax-sheltered annuity or custodial account on behalf of an employee.
All right, and Representative, why don't you start?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Greg McPherson, Representative for House District 38. Members of the committee, the House Bill 3183 was intended as purely a clarifying bill, and it was proposed by my wife, who also is an employee benefits lawyer, and she had, in representing some school districts, she had identified that the statutory authority for employer contributions to a tax-sheltered annuity, which is a very common kind of savings device for public school teachers, was not as clear as it ought to be. The authority for salary reduction contributions is quite clear. That is, when an employee saves out of their own pay, they elect to have their employer put the money into the retirement account, and then it does not appear on their W-2, so they don't pay tax on it. And that's the way that you are able to save with what we call pre-tax dollars, which is one of the really powerful ways of accumulating money for retirement. But the statutes that clearly authorize so-called salary reduction contributions do not clearly authorize employer contributions. That is, an employer to make a contribution to that same retirement vehicle does not have a corresponding salary reduction. And yet that is a feature that a number of our school districts already use, and her aim was to get clear authority to be able to continue doing what they're already doing, because that was in doubt. Now, on the House side, when this bill was presented, there was a representative of the university system who indicated that, in fact, because of that lack of authority, our university system was not actually doing this because they were lacking the authority. So while it was viewed as being a clarifying change, because it was confirming something that was already happening as applying to K-12 districts, apparently other employers were not assuming they had that authority, and so they believe it regarded as a positive change, because it would create authority to make such contributions. And it doesn't obligate the employer to do this. It simply creates a mechanism by which an employer can provide for contributions that don't have a corresponding salary reduction, but are in the employer's nickel, so to speak, but which are part of the compensation package that will be what's essential to attract and hold an effective workforce. With that, I'll take any questions.
All right. Do you have some time? I was going to let Mr. Nelson speak.
I do.
Mark, go ahead, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Mark Nelson, representing the Association of Oregon Faculties. We concur with Representative McPherson's information regarding higher education and that they are not taking advantage of the 403 in the manner that Representative McPherson had said. When we reviewed this bill, I'll take your attention to page 2, line 6. Where it says ORS 2843810 and 243830 are repealed. When we went to council to ask why 243830 was repealed, their response was, well, we're not sure. And our concern, and we've asked them, is it okay to remove that repeal? And let me explain why. The State Board of Higher Education, in the handout that I've handed you, page 478, we have what's called the optional retirement program. And they, for those people who want to be portable in terms of their retirement, they have an option of doing an ORP or doing PERS. And the board is instructed they must make the same contribution as they do for PERS into the ORP. Then you have the 403 language, which you find there in on that same page, 243820, which sets up the 403. But in 830, the language says that was going to be repealed. It says, and an agreement executed pursuant by an employee who is subject to Chapter 238 or a similar retirement program for public employees, a la the ORP, in no way affects the contributions to be made or the benefits to provide for such an employee. Our only concern is if you remove this, someone could say the contribution you're making under the 403 somehow impacts the contribution that is required under the optional retirement program. So we just want to keep that language in there so there's no mistake about that, and so that can't be used. And council said he doesn't remember why he put that in there, and this would have no effect on the bill in the meaning that Representative McPherson wants to use.
Yeah, and I might just supplement that by saying that repealing that provision was not part of my request of Lech Council in the original drafting request. It's just some of those things that happened in the process of their taking the idea and trying to put it into legislative language. So I'm not concerned at all about that amendment to remove the repealer.
Okay, thank you. Questions for either witness?
Mr. Chair, do we have that amendment in draft form?
The dash one should have been on your desk.
Yeah, I can.
With all the other pieces of paper, they're very small.
I don't know. I must have lost it.
Somebody
here. Oh, there it is.
Ah,
there it is. Okay, got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Give everyone an opportunity to just look at the amendment. And Chair, let's see, public hearing, we're still in. Is there any questions for the witnesses? If not, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Was there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on 3183? Not, we'll close the public hearing. We'll open a work session on House Bill 3183. Chair would entertain a motion regarding the Dash 1 amendments.
Mr. Chair, I need to declare a potential conflict of interest as a faculty member at Portland State University.
Okay. So noted for the record.
Mr. Chair, move the Dash 1 amendments in House Bill 3183.
Senator Beyer moves the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 3183. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3183 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Beyer moves House Bill 3183 is amended by the Dash 1s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And do I have anyone who'd like to be a carrier on this bill?
I would be happy to. Right. Or Senator Beyer can have it if he'd like.
If I...
Senator Monroe will be our carrier, and we'll close the work session on 3183. And we will now open work sessions on 2224. So open a work session on House Bill 2224. Ms. Veron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2224A, we heard on May 21st, and this allows the director of DCBS to specify by rule which categories of life insurance, annuities, or disability insurance for which the director does not need to review individually. It requires a report to the legislature January 31st, 2009, sunsets January 2nd, 2012. Declares an emergency effective on passage. The committee will recall this is the conversation about whether we should join the insurance product regulatory compact, and we're not joining it. We're just reviewing to see whether it's consistent with our rules.
Okay. Now that you said that, I remember this. This was one that we took testimony considerable amount, if I remember, and making certain that this was more or less, let's say, a look from a distance as to seeing how it works and whether it would be comparable. And we had, I think, some discussions that we wanted to have, and those that I think have occurred as to this is just what it is, which is just a participation at the overview or spectator type of approach as compared to actually getting into the actual compact. So the chair is willing to take a motion. I believe there's no amendments for this.
There's no amendments.
So,
move House Bill
2224
to the floor with a due pass
recommendation. Senator Barr moves House Bill 2224 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And need a carrier. Senator Barr, do you feel, would you carry that, or just Gordley?
Mm-hmm.
Senator Gordley will be our carrier. Thank you. I thought I saw the pen jump up there real quick.
You did.
Okay. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2224. We'll open up a work session on 2285.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2285, the original bill is replaced in its entirety with the -1 amendment, and the -1 amendment combines what was House Bill 3451A, which modifies the manner in which retirement credits are calculated under the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan, and 2623, which eliminates the break in service provisions of the public employees retirement system. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. So I know we're in work session on this, but my understanding, this is a -1 would, in fact, or basically replace what's in the bill right now. So kind of a classic. Got to stop. And so let's see, Mr. Delaney, you're here. Are you here on this bill as to providing any information? I'm just wondering. And so what I'm going to do, and Bethann Darby, it looks like she's also here. So I'm going to open it up as to whether committee members would like to have someone come up and to answer any questions or not, knowing that we're looking to move the -1s as compared to the original bill.
Sure.
Senator Beyer.
Yeah, I would like to have Mr. Delaney come up and ask questions.
All right. Delaney, thank you very much for being here and coming forward.
I guess to start, and I'm just, trying to read the amendments that are new to me right now, but the way it looks like it, you're eliminating the break in service, which I guess I just want to know if you've done an analysis of that and what the cost of the system will be on that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director of Oregon PERS. Yes, Senator, we have, because the dash amendment that you have in front of you is simply a combination of two prior bills that have been discussed on the House side, which we did do fiscals on, 2623, which was the elimination of break in service.
Yeah.
Our fiscal impact there indicated that it could be a 1 basis point cost or 1 basis point savings to employers in either direction. It's sort of an unknown. And that's because break in service has this unusual sort of unintended consequence that for some members it actually produces a higher benefit by moving into the OPSERP plan than if they were to remain in Tier 1, Tier 2. So it's sort of a question of how many people would get this higher benefit. If you're going into the money match benefit, I can get into all of that, but that was kind of the genesis of the fact that you have this possibility to swing either way. So with 1 basis point As of employer contribution rate, it really became a policy question for the prior committee that heard this on the House side. Is your policy to maintain break in service or not? The PERS board had actually started the concept of elimination of break in service. They were looking this past year at trying to find ways to simplify the PERS system, seeing that this one didn't really have a cost savings or impact. And so what was the purpose? It really seemed to be that the purpose in the past during reform in 03 was that it served as a backstop in case much of reform got overturned. That we would then not have additional people moving back into Tier 1, Tier 2. You could stop that. But with the majority of reform provisions having been upheld, the board looked at that and determined that really the costing mechanism was no longer needed. The board did not ultimately introduce the bill, however, because they did determine it's a benefit issue to which they deferred to the legislature to make that determination on as a policy question. So that's 2623. I'm certainly able to answer additional questions on that, or I can move on to 3451, which is also part of your Dash 1 amendment.
I haven't got that far yet.
Okay. let me just comment on that, and perhaps if you have questions, certainly ask me. For 3451, this bill was not a creation of the PERS board, but they have been aware of this issue, which is to eliminate the gross up. This was actually introduced by the Oregon School Boards Association, working with the Ontario School District. This is the issue that in reform for the new plan, the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan, we moved away from the 600-hour rule as far as determining how you give service credit. Still, 600 hours is still the basis for all three, Tier 1, Tier 2, and OPSERP. But as far as how you determine service credit, instead of doing the 600 hours gives you a year's worth of service credit, we went to the gross up and pro rata of service time. So we said into the new plan, if a person was working in a position that normally would require 2,000 hours a year, and they work 1,000 hours in that year, they get a half year service credit. But in order to not unfairly penalize them when it came to a benefit payment, we didn't use their, or we were directed not to use their actual salary, but instead to gross up their salary to what it would have been if they'd worked full time. It became very complicated. And frankly, Senator, for a part-timer to a part-timer, that is a person that was working part-time under Tier 1, Tier 2, the old 600-hour methodology, and a part-timer under OPSERP, under gross-up, the benefit works out identical. They're just two different ways to do the calculation. This one does have some impact, however, because the actuaries have indicated that eliminating gross-up has approximately, or could have, a 34 basis point impact on employer rates. And that's because of the fact that you could have people who are working part-time through their career and thus getting the same benefit under the old Tier 1, Tier 2 standard as OPSERP, but at those last 3 years prior to retirement, if they move into a full-time position, now under the old Tier 1, Tier 2, you get service credit. All the years prior, previously worked, get calculated under that service credit methodology that existed for Tier 1, Tier 2. That's where there's some exposure. It's not something that would happen immediately. It's, again, if experience were to show it through time. PERS has looked at this and said, basically for us, against policy decision for the legislature, but it's certainly an administrative issue for PERS, the gross-up has been a very complicated issue for us to explain to members and to employers in trying to work with that, and that, in fact, was why it was an employer group that originally brought this forward as a simplification of the plan.
Okay, you're getting next.
Yes, sir. You may need to bring that one up. Okay.
Okay.
Just I'm not clicking there. Does that start to, Senator, at least kind of cover the two general issues?
Sort of.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Gordley.
I think we, because the amendment also relates to legislative service, I think we need to put something on record that says exactly what this bill does as it relates to legislative service. And I'm looking at page 5.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Lines 29 and starting on line 29.
and I'm pointing this out, considering that there's a potential conflict of interest here.
Okay.
For all of us.
Not for me.
Right, right. Senator, Senator Prezansky, Senator Gordley, the break in service legislators had been an exemption to the break in service. One of the many groups that are sort of another growing list of exemptions. Exemption to the break in service had been those people serving in the legislature, so you would no longer need that language if a break in service was eliminated. You would not need to be an exception.
And then go to page 6. Lines 2 and 3.
Again, yes, this is again regarding the break in service. Just ensuring that once you remove the break in service language, you no longer need that. This person remains in whatever plan they are until they terminate their service.
Okay. Well, because this is a gut and stuff, I just want to make sure that we're transparent about what's here.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'm glad you brought that up. All right. So, any other questions? And if not, let's go ahead and see if... All right. I think she's there.
I'm here to questions. Answer questions at the NDRB on behalf of OEA.
All right. Thank you. So the chair will take a motion on the -1 amendments for House Bill 2285.
So moved.
Senator Gordley moves the -1s into House Bill 2285. Discussion?
Mr. Chair, I guess the question, it looks to me like both of these other two are in Ways and Means currently. Is that correct?
My understanding, I believe they are. I know I spoke with one of the co-chairs today, and he was supposed to get back with me if he had an issue with us moving the bill forward. And so that's the last I heard. I've not heard anything else from him. That was this morning when we were on the floor.
By forward, are you intending to ask for motion to move those to the floor or to Ways and Means?
To the floor.
And it looks to me like it's somewhere 2623 had a $260,000 fiscal. I don't know what the fiscal on the other one was. That was the one that potentially has a bigger fiscal way, I understand it.
Senator Prezansky, Senator Beyer, actually the fiscal on 2623, it's one of those, again, as with all things in purse, an interesting impact. The initial impact of $260,000 is because we've been building into our computer systems the break-in-service provisions, and so we would have to pull them out of our new computer system. But we save approximately $260,000 every biennium thereafter, because not having to deal with the issue of break in service. So it becomes, again, much like the employer cost, one basis point either way, so too the administrative costs become a wash.
All right, other questions?
Did the comments being made also that we are other fund agency?
Sorry, Seth.
The comment was also being made that we are an other fund agency, that we are funding is out of the earnings offer fund.
All right.
Not according to the fiscal statement on 2623.
Yeah, Senator Prezansky, Senator Barrios, that was a mistype. I did talk to legislative fiscal about that. They concurred that they mistyped that indication.
Mistyped?
Absolutely.
What does that mean?
They accidentally typed, I believe it says general fund, yeah, on the actual fiscal there. And that was
an error
in typing. We are other fund agency.
Yes, but many of those other fund dollars are general fund dollars coming from general fund agencies. Probably 70% of them.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Gordley.
There's some other language, if we can take a minute.
Yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take a recess. We're going to stand down right now. ...285, and we're in work session, or if not, I'm going to make sure we're in work session. Work session will continue on that bill, and we need a motion on the, I believe it was the -1s.
So moved.
Senator Avakian moves the dash ones into House Bill 2285. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
And I'll move the bill before us. What number is it?
2285.
2285, as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Avakian moves House Bill 2285, as amended by the dash ones, to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any more discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And let's see, a carrier on that one.
I would be pleased to carry that one.
Yeah, I think we'll let Senator Avakian be the carry on that. And that will close the work session on House Bill 2285. So, Anna, why don't we go through what else we need to do, if anything?
We have nothing else we need to do, Mr. Chair.
All right, so that means, since we have completed all of our work today, that the carryover meeting we had set for tomorrow morning at 7:30 is canceled. And let's see. Senator Rowe, we just voted, and we still have the record. I can reopen it if you want to be registered on 2285.
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to reopen the work session on House Bill 2285 for the purpose of allowing Senator Monroe to vote. We've moved it with the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vote aye.
And Senator Monroe votes aye, and we'll go ahead and reclose the work session on 2285.
I have a question. You did get a clarification on the Ways and Means question that came up.
I got a partial clarification,
okay.
And I'll put that on the record. Senator Schrader was not available. He's in a leadership meeting, could not be pulled. And I spoke with Mr. Shipley from the President's office, who stated that we should go ahead and move it to the floor, and that the President's office will be looking at it prior to it coming to the floor to determine to make certain that any fiscals that would be out of line for something going directly to the floor would be looked at and reviewed, and if necessary, would be redirected to the Ways and Means.
Great. It's good to have that on record.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
All right. Anything else?
Senator, excuse me, but what about House Bill 2893 that was scheduled for tomorrow morning?
Oh, that is not going to be scheduled any longer.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever is on the schedule for tomorrow is, let's say, not going forward. And so our work, as far as I can tell, is completed. And I want to thank committee members, and I, unfortunately, Senator Beyer had to leave early for all the work that we've done on this committee. I'm not sure what the number of bills we saw and heard, but I know we
a lot.
Covered a lot of area.
So we're not meeting tomorrow morning at 7:30.
We are not. You have the morning off to go out and jog and run and do whatever else you like to do. I know that you like to get that morning run in so you can get an extra couple of miles in.
I did the long one this morning.
I'd like to acknowledge and honor the work of our committee staff. Honor the quality of communication with my office, our offices, your work on this committee has just been phenomenal.
Thank you.
And I'd also like to put on record that I think there's a judge's robe waiting for you.
First time that's happened to me.
In your future.
Only if we can, only if we can have her sub in here during the session times.
Great.
So, but I also want to do that. I want to thank Anna. She was kind enough to come back this session to serve as a committee administrator. And Senator Gordley, I agree with you. She's been a really focal point and grounded for me as a chair, having the opportunity to chair two committees this session, needing to be able to rely on good quality staff. Mm-hmm. And Anna and Brian, thank you very, very much for
yes,
all of the work that you've done in getting stuff. One thing I can tell you is that as soon as we get finished with here, they don't stop their work. And I will have paperwork in front of me. Usually, I don't think we've missed a day on the day that we've taken action for it to be at my office before the end of that day. Mm-hmm. So, but if you want to take tonight off and bring it over tomorrow, Brian, feel free. Don't put on pressure.
Sure. And the information that they give us when we're carrying bills is very, very helpful, very clean, very concise, and very helpful.
Today was a great example of
thank
that.
You know.
And Mr. Chair, before you close, if I could just add my thanks to the chair too for a very efficient, well-run committee on some difficult issues.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
All right. With that, we'll close the Committee on Commerce. I assume for the last time, unless the President of the Senate decides something different. With that, we're adjourned, and thank you again.